Coming up next, I'm going to reveal the four bosses that everyone should fire. And then more employers are offering debt-free education. Parking lot wars are back as people return to the office. And we coach you up. And it all starts right now. All right, folks, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where we help you win at work and in life. Let's go. How about setting you free to fire your bad boss? How about that for a start to a show? Here it comes, because I'm going to identify for you with some popular TV bosses. Okay, so we're going to have some caricatures here to go with the real-life horrible bossery that you people are dealing with. And I am a man of the people, and I want to set you free. So you got to know, who am I working for one of these type of bosses? Okay, it's time. What do I do about it? So we're going to identify these four bosses that you should fire if you're working for one of them, which, by the way, you're going, Ken, I'm sorry. Could you clarify, please? When I say that you should fire them, I mean that you should quit. That's what I mean. You just go in and go, hey, I'm firing you. I'm kidding. You don't say that. We want you to quit. Well, we'll tell you how to do it. All right. So let's get into these bosses. And why do I spend a tremendous amount of time on this show talking about horrible bossery or awful leadership? Because it's a scourge. And because sometimes there is something you can do about it, and sometimes there is not. And we cannot continue to live our lives going into the office, dealing with horrible bosses and crappy leadership, all because you are afraid that you can't escape it. That's what's going on. It is fear that you are stuck dealing with a horrible leader. That's what's going on. So, all right, here we go. We had some fun with this in our production meeting, in our team meeting, kind of going, because we could come up with these all day long. But I tried to categorize all horrible bossery into these areas. So here we go. The first one is the helicopter. Yes, there it is. Jack Donaghy, Alec Baldwin's character on 30 Rock. He's the micromanager. That's what we mean by helicopter. Always hovering. And you notice how those helicopters work. You know, you see the helicopter scenes in movies. What happens? Helicopter starts to hover. Everybody starts doing this number right here. Right? They crouch. They cover their head. There's all kinds of debris flying everywhere. That's what the helicopter, the micromanager, does. They hover. They're loud. They make you crouch and protect your head because of all of the debris that they spin off. Leadership debris. What's that look like? Shock, criticism, stifling rules. I mean, all of that kind of crap. That's the helicopter leader, the micromanager. I mean, that's all they do is micromanage. I remember the very first scene of 30 Rock. I mean, the very first show of 30 Rock. And we're introduced to Alec Baldwin's character, Jack Donaghy. And so Tina Fey is the head writer of a show. And she walks in one day and this dude shows up. This is her new leader. She's like, what? Who's this guy? And as the first episode unveils itself, he puts her on a meeting that she's got to go to for a new star that she doesn't even want in the show. So he's already micromanaging, and she's out doing that. She comes back, and he's taking over the show. It's her job. He's micromanaging. Ugh. I think, by the way, the reason I led with the helicopter leaders, because when I polled a bunch of you recently on Instagram, at Ken Coleman, if you want to follow me and engage, micromanaging was by far the number one cause of your disengagement. That's what you, the people, said. Okay, let's keep going here. Our next one, the substitute teacher. This is the type of leader. I call him the substitute teacher. So let's go with this one. This is Ron Swanson. I believe we got that image. There he is, Mr. I'm sorry. I know for our listening audience, you can't see the image, but in your mind's eye, picture that clown, and he just makes me laugh. But Ron Swanson in Parks and Rec, if you've never seen the show, he was the hands-off leader. And so you go, Ken, why do you call them the substitute teacher? All right, let's all harken back to the days when we were students, and then for those of you parents, Amanda and I, we were recently in this. Your kids come home. They always come home and you say, how's your day? You know what I'm talking about, Amanda? And they'll always say, well, we had a substitute teacher today in math. And every time it's a free-for-all. Because the substitute teacher, I'm not knocking substitute teachers. Don't anybody get your feelings hurt. The substitute teacher on average, the average substitute teacher is there for one reason. Just to kind of keep the train on the tracks. All right, here's some busy work. They just want to keep the thing from burning down until the regular teacher gets back. Let's be honest. And so kids get away with crap they shouldn't get away with the substitute teacher. They push the substitute teacher. This is how kids are. You did it. My kids do it. Come on. And so Ron Swanson was kind of that, he had that substitute teacher attitude. And a lot of you work for leaders like this. And let me tell you something. We kind of have a little fun with this because they're not anywhere near as obnoxious or debilitating as the helicopter leader, but they are destructive in their hands-off, blasé attitude. Is anything getting done when the substitute teacher's in? The answer is no. So things aren't getting done when your leader acts and leads like a substitute teacher. All right, third, the selfie taker. This is great. This is a scourge of our society. I was just on spring break with my kids, by the way, and I got to tell you, folks, I accidentally photobombed at least 200 teenage girls just trying to walk to the beach. Nathan, I'm not kidding you. I remember one specific day, I was walking up the thing, the little ramp to go to the beach, and there was a gal about, 10 yards in front of me, and I had my head down, and I see her up there, and I'm looking at my phone, texting my wife, telling her where I'm going, and I look up, and she had stopped, and she's doing one of these numbers, and I'm right there in it, the selfie pose. And so what's the selfie taker about? It's all about them. They steal all the credit, or try to, and they try to avoid all blame. They don't want to look bad or feel bad. This is the teenage girl. What's it about? Oh my gosh, I'm totally walking on the crosswalk, and it's beautiful. It's time for a picture. It's all about me. By the way, don't do what I did. This is a classic dad move. This is public service announcement, extra content. Nobody's asking for it, but you'll thank me for it, guys. Especially dads. Don't try to be friendly and ever offer to take a picture of a gaggle of young girls, because they'll look at you like you're an alien. Because they're like, why would you take the picture? We can do it ourselves. Do you know what I'm talking about? Because I always like the person who is, let's say my wife and I are trying to take a selfie. We look like idiots. And so the nice person comes up and goes, Ken and Stacey seem to be struggling there. I'm going to offer to take a pic. I appreciate that. Don't do that to teens, because they're going to be like, what? We can take the picture ourselves. Thank you, old man. Move along. Okay. The final.
Michael Scott mentioned.
The final. Oh, yeah, right. The selfie taker. Thank you. Thank you. I got so excited about the selfies. Let's throw our selfie taker leader up. Who is this in television? Well, it's none other than the worst leader of all time, Michael Scott, from The Office. Remember Michael Scott? He did this all the time. So I got one more leader. It's the worst leader. I'm going to reveal it next. And then what do we do about the worst leader? How do we fire him? And then how do we move on? I'm going to unpack it all. Oh, this is going to be good. Who do you think the dictator is? I'll reveal it next. Who are the four bosses that everyone should fire? Well, we led off with the first three, and I saved what I think is the kind of the worst for last. The first three are the helicopter leader. That's the micromanager, Jack Donaghy, Alec Baldwin's character on 30 Rock was our example. The substitute teacher, they're kind of the hands-off, just trying to mind the store. Don't want to get their hands dirty. It's just real autopilot-type leadership. That was Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. Then our third leader was the selfie taker, where they're the glory hounds. It's just all about them looking good. They don't want any blame, and they want to steal your credit. They'll take credit for everything. That's the selfie taker. It's all about me. That's Michael Scott from The Office. All right, so you ready for the last one? It's the dictator. Now, who is this? Because we could have gone a lot of ways here. But the team and I were talking about, I go, who's going to represent the dictator as we teach this? And here it is, Miranda Priestly. Scary. I saw this movie with my wife. The Devil Wears Prada is the movie. She's very scary. Very scary boss. And Meryl Streep, one of the greatest actors to ever grace the big screen, she plays evil Miranda. And she's the dictator. It is her way or the highway, baby. And it's a terrifying prospect. And a lot of you work for that dictator. They are manipulative. And they only want to hear one thing from you. Yes, ma'am, or yes, sir. That's all they want to hear. They don't want to hear any feedback. They don't want any pushback. They are dictators. They will do whatever it takes to make their way happen. That's what's going on. So what do you do if you got to have a firing conversation with all these leaders? Well, remember, you're not going to go in and tell them you're fired, but you are going to go in and quit. So let's just run through some practical steps. If you've identified, now you go, okay, Ken, this is true. You give me permission to move on. All right, let's talk about practical and then philosophical. Philosophical first. I want you to understand that you do not have to stay under this type of leadership. If you learn what we teach, the book From Paycheck to Purpose, if you take the Get Clear assessment and you realize what your sweet spot is and you realize that you're not limited to this one job with this really crappy leader, that's the first step. The clarity and the confidence and the courage to go, okay, I'm going to look for something else and then I'm going to walk. So let's marry the philosophical. This is how to really discover who you are and what you can do. And we've got those resources for you, From Paycheck to Purpose and the Get Clear Career Assessment. It's a bundle at kencoleman.com. Take the assessment, then read the book. All right, that'll help you, guide you on the journey to finding something else. Okay, so once we find something else, now we walk. And the only asterisk to that advice is if you've got the financial wherewithal to be out of work for some time. So once we know what we want to do, we got the confidence, we found something, now we're going to go in and we're going to go, look, hey, I'm out. And you're going to leave the way you would want someone to leave you, even though you work for a jerk of a boss. Now, I paused on purpose because I like to mention this. There are times where a bad leader, like one of these four, is a bad person. But many times, even if they're one of these four types of leaders, it doesn't make them a bad person. Have a little grace. There's something going on in their life. There's something going on in their past that they've developed this leadership style because they've seen it modeled. Or they don't know what else to do, and they kind of gravitate to this style. They've seen it. They've experienced it. Or they just go, I think this is the only way to do it because it's the only way I know how, right? Okay, so at this point now, we're going to sit down with them. We're going to go, hey, I'm out. We don't need to right our wrongs. We just don't. Some people feel like, Ken, do I need to right my wrongs? No, not really. And also, there are opportunities early on to have a very non-confrontational meeting where you go, hey, I'm experiencing this, this, and this. And without telling them what they're doing to cause it, talk about what's happening and can they help you relieve it, even though they're the source of it. That conversation should happen. Give them a chance, if you will. But if they won't change, and a lot of times they won't, you're out. You don't have to put up with this nonsense. So I want to make sure you understand, you don't have to deal with this. You can find purpose and meaning in your work. You can find your sweet spot in other places. And we've given you tools to do so. Okay? And then secondly, there is a very clear courage that comes when you go, okay, I found something else and now I'm out. I don't have to put up with this. And then as we look to other places, one little caveat, you want to do your homework. Talking to people who work in that building. Find out, am I about ready to come to work for another one of these four awful bosses? Whoa! Hit the brakes. Keep looking. This is the key. Once you fire one of these bosses, don't go sign up for another one. This is not going to get better. All right. We got a couple of items to get to. Let's go in the news. All right. First story. Morning Brew here is the source. More employers are offering debt-free education and upskilling opportunities. Good. Good, good, good. Quick little note to leaders who watch and listen to the show. People are not looking for a better job anymore. They're looking for a better life. And you've got to understand what that means. That's just more than paychecks. It's benefits. It's a ladder of opportunity where they see growth. This is what people are looking for. And if you don't provide it, they're going to skip over you or they're going to leave you. So Pepsi Company is the latest company to offer education benefits. This is not a new thing. On February 22nd, the company announced a partnership with Guild Education to provide employees with more than 100 debt-free education opportunities. Walmart's done this. Target's done this. Dollywood has done this. Some bigger names. It's not a new concept. By the way, little axiom. If Dolly's doing it, you got to at least consider it. She's one of the greatest people to ever walk the face of the earth. Dolly Parton. All right. Little Tennessee Southern moment, folks. Get over it. All right. So Pepsi is going to cover the cost of the tuition on those 100 different programs, books, and fees, provided, now there's a catch, that employees remain at the company for a year after completing the course. So a little bit of a hook, but I have no problem with that. And this is cool. Pepsi's also partnering in these with this Guild Education, but they're partnering with accredited institutions. So you've got accreditation, which is really valuable. And also many HBCUs. These are historic black college and universities, which I think is great to offer opportunities to kids in areas that may not normally get that opportunity. And I really applaud that. These include high school completion courses, upskilling, training, and undergraduate college classes in business and data analytics boot camps. According to a June 2021 Gallup poll, companies offering upskilling could have a competitive advantage when it comes to recruiting. Duh. 48% of Americans said they would switch to a job that offered upskilling, and 65% of workers believe employer-provided upskilling is very important when evaluating a potential new job. I told you, people do not want a better job. Even if they tell you they want a better job, I'm telling you what they're actually looking for. They're looking for a better life. And that's key. Okay, one quick little thing we got to get to. Yeah, I got about a minute on this. This is great. Headline from the Wall Street Journal. The office parking lot wars are back. Well, in the Northeast and certain parts of the West, right, that were shut down for a longer period of time, a lot of people are flocking back to the office. Companies are going, we want you in the office. Even in a hybrid model, they're coming back into the office more often. And so this is a Wall Street Journal article, and it's causing indigestion for people who had a spot that they liked. they focus on this guy named Hunter Palmer, who works at a skyscraper in downtown Dallas. He goes, I'm very self-centered, and I want my parking spot that's really good. Palmer's 33 was among the building's early returners last year and grew accustomed to parking like a boss in the underground garage. Though he doesn't have a reserved space like his firm's real bosses, he could reliably land a desirable spot because so few people went to the office. He goes, those days are gone. Now I got to park out the back. Oh, and he doesn't like it. Oh, boy. We are creatures of habit. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. A lot of buzz all around the internet, on the socials, you know the gram, the talk. I know, folks, it's called Instagram and TikTok, but that stuff makes my kids roll their eyes, so I find it to be entertaining. But anyway, nonetheless, all over the internet, the Google, is mentions of this guy Phil from ZipRecruiter. People are saying things like this. Elisa said, Phil, you're amazing. You gave me the confidence I needed to land an awesome job. Thank you. That Phil sounds like somebody you want in your corner to get a great gig where you're making more money and experiencing more meaning. If you want an easier job search, go check out Phil at ZipRecruiter. He can help you. ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com. By the way, I want to point out, I love endorsing ZipRecruiter because it's a free service to you, the people. It doesn't cost you a nickel. So stop it. Go check it out. You know it'll help you. Let's go. All right. Up next is Josh in Nacogdoches, Texas. Josh, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's up?
So I recently just entered the job market. I'm searching for jobs in my area. It's actually kind of limited in terms of finding a good role with good pay and at a good company.
How big of an area is Nacogdoches?
There is about 40,000 people here, and but the surrounding areas is kind of the issue. Uh-huh. There's a lot of small towns around the surrounding areas, so everybody flocks towards us.
I see.
Okay. And so I'm looking for, you know, a good job that kind of fits what I'm looking for. And I graduated here. It's a college town. In 2020, I got a job through a connection at the school I worked for here, working full time. And there's really no growth. There's no room for growth in terms of a role or pay.
Yeah.
And so I got hired on knowing that it was going to be short term. So I'm finishing my master's here in May. I've begun the job search, and I found a few jobs that lined up with what I'm looking for.
But, which is what?
I want to either get into a managerial type role, which is what I am now. I'm an office manager.
For what industry?
Well, my undergrad's ag business and my master's in business administration, so I'm kind of open to anything.
Okay, but I'm saying right now you're an office manager where?
Oh, it's a family company. It's primarily agriculture.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Keep going.
But I'm really intrigued by finance. I love finance. So I was looking at an agriculture lending bank with a job there that really lined up with what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
I submitted an application. It took about a month to get back, and then they didn't continue with my application. I didn't even get to the interview process. And
sure.
I don't know how to get past. I'm pretty sure. Confident once I get to that interview, I can win.
You're just getting stuck. You're getting stuck in the filter. Yeah. Okay. So, a couple of things. I'm guessing you did this all online, right? And so they've got a software where you applied, and you really probably didn't even talk to a human, I'm guessing. Correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So there's the problem. So I know you're discouraged right now, and I really want to address that. Josh, the good news is that you've been doing it all wrong. The bad news is you've been doing it all wrong, but you don't need to be discouraged. You're playing the lottery. You ever see one of those old ladies in the casinos sitting there with their bucket of coins at the slot machine? You ever seen that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. By the way, I don't mean to pick on old ladies, old dudes. What? You guys are so sensitive in the control room. Good grief. Everybody knows it's mostly old ladies anyway. Doesn't make it wrong. But what are they doing, Josh? What are they doing? Describe that to me.
Well, they're gambling.
They're gambling. Not putting much effort in. That's it. They're sitting there. There's no skill. There's very little effort. Come on. They're sitting there in their sweatpants and their Velcro shoes, putting in the quarter and pulling on the thing, and then they just hope for the best. That's what you've been doing. And I mean that. I mean, seriously, it's the same idea. Well, I'm going to apply and try to hope that my resume is attractive enough. But here's the deal. Most of those softwares will bump you if you don't have one keyword right or something else. So here's what I teach on this show. You've probably listened or watched enough to hear me talk about connections. It is relationships that we have to focus on in the job search. Do I know somebody that works over at Agricultural Bank? That's what I'm calling it for our phone call. Do I know somebody that works over there? Is the answer yes or no, Josh? Tell me.
Not directly, but indirectly. I knew somebody that knew somebody.
You knew somebody that knew somebody. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you call up the somebody that you knew? And did you say, hey, listen, I just applied online, but I don't want to rely on that. And I know you know Daryl over there who works over in the corner off of Agricultural Bank, and he works on turbines. I'm making all this stuff up. I don't know. I'm over my skis right now. And would you be able to connect me to Daryl? Phone, email, would he be willing to do coffee with me? Because I'd like to make a connection with him to see if he'd be comfortable endorsing me as a candidate. Did you do that?
I did, actually, and he put in a good word. He didn't get me in contact with her, but she got back with him and told him that essentially it comes down to their HR department and their main branch.
I understand, but do you see how that doesn't feel so good? I appreciate your effort, but I don't think we finished the deal, did we? Because what I described is very different than what you did. You just called your somebody and asked your somebody if they'd put in a nice word to that somebody, and it's like, okay, yeah, but you know what? It's pretty much up to HR. That's not what I want. I want that person to go, hey, I took his resume over to the head of HR and told him, I think Josh is a rock star. But how could she ever say that if she's never met you? Now, I know what I'm telling you is not comfortable. But in a small town where you have limited opportunities, my friend, you're going to have to go above and beyond. And you're going to have to start meeting people. And if you want to be in finance, you got to use the proximity principle. I wrote an entire book on it, and I'm going to give it to you today. Will you read it?
Yes, sir. Yeah,
the proximity principle says, in order to do what Josh wants to do, finance. And fill in the blank for anything else. He's got to be around people that are doing it and in places where this happens. So what does that mean? That means you got to start hanging out and having lunch with people where a job may not even be available, but you got friends, your mom, your dad, your Uncle Larry, I don't care. Your college professor gets you in touch with people that are finance professionals, and you go to lunch and you act like you're doing a term paper based on them. And you ask them questions. How do you win? How'd you get where you are? What's the best part of your day? What's the worst part of your day? What qualifications do you think somebody might need to do the work you do? Do you understand what I'm saying, Josh?
Yes.
Do you see how that could lead to some real opportunities? Because they go, this guy, Josh, he's hungry. He's humble. I'm going to open up a door or two for Josh. That's how we get good jobs. Is this making sense?
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Now, listen, in the book, The Proximity Principle, I detail out five people you need to be around and five places you need to be in. So I do all the hard work. It's based on my journey. And I promise you, if you read it and do it, you will get opportunities. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Because look, don't forget, you're in a competition. Feels like it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think we sometimes forget that we're competing against other people. In Nacogdoches, there ain't a whole lot of spots open. Now, can I push you? Can I push you for a moment? You need to start looking beyond your area. You're a young man. The world is your oyster. I know that may not be comfortable for you. Maybe it is. But I'd be looking to bigger cities, too. You got connections all over this world that you may not even realize. That book is going to unveil to you the truth, which is you already know everybody that you need to know to get the gigs that you want. So you need to expand your horizons. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Because listen, man, you're hurting your chances when you limit yourself to a town of 40,000 people. And then there's the 15,000 to 25,000 people and all the little bergs and hollows and rivers and creeks that are coming to Nacogdoches to try to get a gig. So let's expand our territory, I think, is something we also need to add into the process. Hang on the line. Jenna's going to get you a copy of my best-selling book, The Proximity Principle. And you know what? While he's on the line, Jenna, let's also give him a copy of my latest best-selling book, From Paycheck to Purpose, because I think he needs a little bit more guidance on what is purposeful work look like for me. Let's give him both books, and that'll help him. Hey, I got to get out of here. You matter. You have what it takes. Press on.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.
Hey, if you're a fan of this podcast, we've got more where that came from. As you know, at Ramsey, we're always looking to protect our listeners from scummy companies, slick marketing, and money myths. I'm George Camel, host of The Fine Print, where I do the research for you to help you rise above the system that's designed to keep you broke and in debt so that you can become confident in your money choices. Check out The Fine Print wherever you listen to podcasts.